It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, it's dominated the news in the last 24 hours. The CIA's harsh interrogations of terrorist detainees during the Bush era didn't work. It was more brutal than previously revealed and delivered no, quote, ticking time bomb information that prevented an attack. That's according to this report issued yesterday. The report by the Senate Intelligence Committee, a damning condemnation of the tactics of the Bush administration deploying in the days after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, methods which have been branded by critics as torture. The techniques, according to the report, were deeply flawed, poorly managed, often resulted in fabricated information. The study took 5 years to create and was distilled from more than 6 million CIA documents. It also says the CIA consistently misled Congress and the Bush White House about the harsh methods it used and the results it obtained from interrogating al-Qaeda suspects. Yesterday, California Senator Dianne Feinstein of the Senate Intelligence Committee, in fact, the chair of that committee, called the CIA practices recorded in the declassified Senate report on torture a stain on our values, on our history. Over the past 5 years, Senate committee investigators examined 6.3 million pages of CIA records on torture practices.
It shows that the CIA's actions a decade ago are a stain on our value and on our history. The release of this 500-page summary cannot remove that stain, but it can and does say to our people and the world that America is big enough to admit when it's wrong and confident enough to learn from its mistakes. Releasing this report is an important step to restore our values and show the world that we are, in fact, a just and lawful society.
California Senator Dianne Feinstein. This hour, we want to discuss the report and its political implications with two of our regular political analysts. Dennis Goldford is with us, professor of political science, and now Flansburg Fellow at the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement at Drake University in our Des Moines studio. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi, Ben. Hi, Chris.
Chris Larimer is with us in the Cedar Falls studio, where I am as well, associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Dennis.
And we're going to hear Dennis and Chris's reactions, insights here, analysis, but we want to reach out to our listeners as well this hour. What is your reaction? For instance, is torture under certain circumstances in keeping with American values? Does the use of such extreme interrogation methods make our country more or less secure? 1-866-780-9100, our toll-free number. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook, where we have a few comments, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Your reaction this hour to the Senate Intelligence Committee report released yesterday. Let's go to Chris and Dennis here. Dennis, let me ask you, it's been the buzz in news circles, also political circles, the last 24 hours. What do you see here that hasn't been said before, at least in an official manner?
Well, there's always been the question as to whether, in fact, these techniques are, number one, effective, and number two, whether, in fact, they are moral or in keeping with American values. And this conflict and their legitimate arguments on both sides goes back a long way in the history of political thought and Western society and so forth. A Supreme Court justice famously once said the Constitution is not a suicide pact. And so the argument on one side is that, and you see it manifested here, I think, on the Democratic side in particular, that there's certain things a civilized country, one with American values in particular, simply does not do to people, that it violates our very notions of individual dignity that are the foundations of our democracy and our respect for the individual. And So in that view, there's simply certain things that a government never should do to someone, no matter what the circumstances. The argument on the other side is a more Machiavellian argument, and that's the idea that in certain considerations of great threat to security or well-being, you can't rule anything out, that you've got to do certain things in order to protect the country. That's the primary role of the government. So the argument on the Democratic side tends to be, number one, there's certain things the government did it should never do. Number two, they argue that the justification for doing these things is that they worked, and they attack that particular view, in fact, supported by Senator McCain, interestingly. Mm-hmm. The argument on the Republican side is that these were necessary to do, and they worked.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen to Senator John McCain commenting on this Senate report. And it's interesting, when we talk about the partisanship here that is revived here, Senator McCain is an interesting person in Congress. He commented on the Senate report, citing his own experience as a POW in Vietnam. He called the practice of waterboarding, quote, a mock execution and an exquisite form of torture.
I know from personal experience that the abuse of prisoners will produce more bad than good intelligence. I know that victims of torture will offer intentionally misleading information if they think their captors will believe it. I know they will say whatever their torturers want them to say if they believe it will stop their suffering. Most of all, I know the use of torture compromises that which most distinguishes us from our enemies. Our belief that all people, even captured enemies, possess basic human rights which are protected by international conventions the United States not only joined, but for the most part authored.
Senator John McCain yesterday reacting to the new report. River to River listeners, what's your reaction? Is torture under certain circumstances in keeping with American values? That's part of this debate. 1-866-780-9100. We're on Facebook. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Chris Larimer, what jumps out at you about this report? So many facets. As a political scientist, what are you looking at?
Well, you know, a little bit of it's already been said, but I think the fact, you know, I think people were had sort of been accustomed to the fact that torture was perhaps being used, and the psychology of the American public was that torture was being used and to some extent was acceptable in the media in the months after 9/11. But I think, as Dennis mentioned, what's interesting here is the extent to which the Democratic report on this and the one that's getting all the attention shows that these tactics were primarily ineffective or largely ineffective in terms of producing intelligence that was actionable. So I think that sticks out. I also think it sticks out to the extent to which the CIA, if it's true, if the Democratic report is true, misled, purposely misled, that the Bush administration purposely misled Congress, seemed to ignore oversight within the CIA itself, within the Office of Inspector General. And so I think some of those things stick out, the extent to which the CIA seemed to abuse their power, abuse the sort of the level of intelligence that they had in terms of acting on this that nobody else had.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, I found interesting, I'd like your comment on this, the fact that this White House, at least in reports that I've seen, didn't want to know many details about it. In fact, was it 3 or 4 years after it had begun that President Bush, then President Bush, was informed of what was going on in detail?
Well, there's an old phrase you find in politics as well as other areas, and that's called plausible deniability. You know, there's the old line that if you like, well, how's it go precisely? You should never watch legislation being crafted. You know, like you don't want to see sausage being made, and because it's not a pretty process. And the argument extends to questions of national security. There's certain things, so the argument goes, that have to be done that the average person doesn't want to know about, and White Houses, of course, want to claim credit for things that go well. They want to avoid blame or accountability or responsibility for things that don't go well. And the best way to avoid accountability for things that don't go well is to make sure that in some sense you don't really know what's been done. So that's the idea of plausible deniability. And, of course, you've got Vice President Cheney who wants to claim that these tactics did work. They refuse to use the word torture because that, of course, is a loaded word. By definition, torture is impermissible. That's why you have the euphemism advanced interrogation techniques. But they just want to insist that, well, we don't know precisely what was done here, and it raises the accountability of the CIA issue that Chris quite correctly points to, but they don't want to know the details, and now they're paying the price for that.
I noticed Senator Feinstein in the report said explicitly this is not an attack on President Bush and that he did not know the length and breadth of what was going on. We talked about plausible deniability there being part of not just that administration, but previous administrations and much talked about. Let's go to our phones, 1-866-780-9100. We're looking to you for your reaction to this report, heavily redacted report. And Chris Larimer, sitting across from me, you have a significant portion of that printed out. You've been reading it. What's your reaction? Is torture under certain circumstances in keeping with the American set of values? 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk with Jim from Spencer. Thanks for joining us, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm very embarrassed to know the details about these activities as an American, and I think that you know, we all should expect that in this country that we do not hide anything that has any kind of appearance of impropriety, especially to the rest of the world. But the one thing I wanted to say is the idea that this is politically motivated, that I find that hard to believe, because if that's all they wanted to do was, you know, gain some upper hand from this kind of report, then why wouldn't they have used it before the election?
Mm. Chris or Dennis, any thoughts to the political motivation aspect of Jim's question there?
Well, I think Jim raises a good point. It's you know, we talk about politics make strange bedfellows, and you had the clip by John McCain certainly supporting Senator Feinstein in this report. So you have a Democrat and Republican. On the other side, you have George W. Bush, Dick Cheney coming out, and aides to both men saying that the report should not be released. And then you also have Secretary of State John Kerry saying the report should not be released. And in the middle of all that, you have the Obama administration, who's focusing on transparency, which is what Jim had mentioned, and the importance of transparency. But that's a difficult balance to make in terms of, do you put this out where it looks politically motivated with a Democratic president putting out a report that's very damning of a Republican administration, or do you withhold it in the interest of national security, but you're ignoring the value of transparency? So I think it was going to be a difficult report to release either way, and I think it's just something that Senator Feinstein felt needed to go out now, before the politics of the United States Senate change.
President Obama signing early on, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, an executive order that banned this type of practice early on in his presidency. But Dennis, wasn't there some, should I call it foot dragging, or at least a delay caused by the administration not really wanting this to come out now?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Some observers, including quite a number of Democrats, I think, have basically argued that the Obama administration is continuing the foreign policy approach of the Bush administration. And they look at the president's use of drones and to take out certain kinds of targets in the Middle East or in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And the argument there is that this administration might have wanted to come in wearing, you know, waving the white flag of moral purity. And the argument is that they found that it's a tough world we live in, and there's certain things that have to be done, even if from the outside looking in, you didn't really want them to be done. Again, that's where the argument is. Are there certain things that one should never do, or in some cases, do considerations of national security override those moral strictures? And that's the fundamental division.
Mm-hmm. And we see, when we talk about this through a partisan lens, look at it a little bit, that share some comments in reaction from our own congressional delegation. Senator Tom Harkin saying he's praising the release of this report as a, quote, great service to the American people. He said sunshine is the best disinfectant. We, the American people, ought to know what's being done in our in their name. We can't do this anymore. It should never happen again. Senator Chuck Grassley questioning whether the report should have been released at all. saying it might further hurt national security, endanger intelligence gathering personnel. He said, I support anything that is legal for American citizens under the Constitution or for combatants under the Geneva Conventions. And Representative Steve King, definitely against the release of this, saying it puts our national security at risk. It puts Americans at risk around the world, Representative Steve King. How do you weigh in on this? What's your reaction to the Senate Intelligence Committee report on torture? 1-866-780-9100. We have Chris Larimer with us of the University of Northern Iowa, Dennis Goldford of Drake University. We'll hope to have you join us with your reaction and comments. It's Politics Day on River to River. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about the new report that's been the buzz in the media all across the country. Want to find out if it is for you. During his administration, George W. Bush said detention and interrogation of terrorism suspects was humane and legal. Now, this new report by the Senate Intelligence Committee says the CIA routinely misled the White House and Congress about the brutality of interrogating terrorism suspects. And the report finds the most extreme interrogation methods played no role in disrupting terrorist plots, even the capturing of terrorist leaders, even finding Osama bin Laden. We want your reaction this hour. 1-866-780-9100. Chris Larimer, I want to ask you about public opinion here. We're getting some of it through our Facebook page, also our callers, a very, very small sample. Where do you think the public is compared to where lawmakers are in reacting to this?
Well, I think there's going to be a growing disconnect here. I mean, right now, certainly Democrats and Republicans are differing over the results of the torture or the interrogation techniques. That is, that these actions did not produce the intended results, according to Democrats who wrote the majority report here. But I think for the public, I think there's going to be a difference here. You know, certainly over time, public attitudes regarding these advanced interrogation techniques have shifted a little bit. They're not probably seen as justified as they were in the past, particularly right after the September 11th attacks. But I think for the public, they generally get more upset about procedural things or procedural matters. So in this case, you have the CIA ignoring due process in terms of reporting to the administration, reporting to Congress, potentially lying to Congress in various testimonies. And then also ignoring their own Office of Inspector General, who's sort of the oversight within these federal agencies. And so I think for the public, they're probably more upset about the fact that the CIA completely ignored process, that they're abusing their own power, potentially more so than the fact that these actions didn't always produce the intended result.
Mm-hmm. I would expect, though, Chris, the public to it's interesting you say that. I would expect the public to focus more on this notion that they didn't connect the dots before 9/11. And obviously no government official wanted to be in the position after 9/11 mm-hmm. of ignoring something that led to a second 9/11. And I would expect the public to be more concerned with that notion that, no, if somebody says he knows of a nuclear device in Central Park in New York, we're going to read him his Miranda rights. I would expect the public, at least at first, to have that view. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you know, you remember the Japanese internment in World War II after Pearl Harbor. Out in the West Coast when the Japanese were sent to these camps because of fears of a Japanese invasion, possible collaboration. Of course, there was nothing similar done to German Americans, but it was done to Japanese Americans. It was considered justified at the point, but later on, government officials and the public at large did come to think that was mm-hmm. the wrong thing to do, and it was just immoral to have done that. So, as you said, there will be some change over time, I think.
1-866-780-9100. We have a number of callers. Let's go to at least a few of them. Shannon in Muscatine joins us. Hello, Shannon.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think the real threat to our national security is the actual torturing of these individuals. I don't think it makes sense to say, well, we're going to do wrong and just hide it. And I would like the American people to remember that when our government does wrong, it is actually we, the people, that pay the price.
Okay. Thank you, Shannon and Muscatine. Let's move on to another caller. Is this Clinton is the name in Minnesota, calling from Minnesota?
Yep, he sure is.
Thank you for listening from Minnesota. What's on your mind?
Well, the people who are now criticizing the report seem to be quite vague in their so-called logic. I've listened to the so-called reasons, and that's, I guess, to be expected because they've been caught on the side of supporting, you know, the CIA actions, a.k.a. torture. My question is have these same people ever been found on record to support torture before, that will at least demonstrate consistency and they're not just trying to squeeze out of a bad previous position? I mean, I find it interesting that now they're complaining about it, but in the past there's no evidence that any of these people said that these types of actions were okay.
Well, I think I know what you're getting at, and perhaps Dennis can jump in here too, or Chris. The CIA arguing here in reaction to this, several points that I picked up. One, that it's a political witch hunt. Also, that there was, in fact, important information gained from these enhanced interrogation techniques. And it says it was approved by the Bush administration leader and leaders in Congress. Dennis, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I'm trying to figure out the question still. So.
Yeah, yeah. I guess one is going back to, have people own this word torture, or is that, can we dispense with enhanced interrogation and call it for what it seems it is?
Well, again, that's a loaded word, torture, right? I mean, we can talk about the way government officials use euphemisms all the time. I mean, it's if you were to do certain things to someone simply for the enjoyment of watching him suffer in pain, that's torture. But I think these folks would tend to believe that these techniques, whatever the proper name, were necessary in their view, even though some question that, as we saw McCain do, necessary to elicit highly necessary information. That's what the people who object to the report are standing up for. And that's why I think the report hits so hard on the idea that, look, the only justification plausible is that it worked and it didn't work.
Okay. Now, in this report, we have the Democrats in this actually calling it torture. Picking up on that point, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, other human rights advocates around the world say now prosecutions must follow the release of this report. Amnesty International USA's executive director, Stephen Hawkins, I guess I did get it right the first time, said in a statement, torture is a crime, and those responsible for crimes must be brought to justice, citing a UN convention against torture. No exceptional circumstance exists in the UN convention to justify invoking torture, Chris Larimer.
Well, I think that's going to be difficult to make the case that certain people should be prosecuted for this, because this is in a 525-page report that was originally 6,000 pages. So much of it has been redacted, and you have a 160-some page rebuttal by the Republicans arguing that that actually did produce intelligence that was useful. So I think it's going to be hard to actually get to sort of a final answer on this. And so I think, you know, prosecutions, I think, are going to be difficult to come by in this case.
Okay. Let's go back to our phones. Don is in Gilmore City. Don, chip in. Don, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Don. We're hearing you now. Don in Gilmore City, welcome to the program.
Well, I don't think the report should have been released at this time. Despite the fact that the news has indicated in the, well, the so much of the system says that the war is over, we've still got a lot of people, a lot of soldiers in both Iraq and Iran and other hot spots. This isn't going to make their life any easier.
Mm-hmm.
And one comment I want to make is going back to the public in general. I think basically the public wants to be safe at nearly any cost. And George Orwell, in one of his writings, wrote something to the effect that people sleep peacefully at night knowing that there are men willing to do violence in their behalf. Hello?
Yes, Don, you're still on the air. We're listening. Okay. Very good stuff here.
I do agree that enhanced interrogation probably does not yield very much good for the most part. But I know people that probably would have been here now
if a little bit better intelligence would have been gained.
Okay, Don. Thank you. Thank you for giving us your opinion. And this is important to say. We have to think back 10 years or more to the mindset, Chris Larimer, that many of us were, and many of us were, let's say, less concerned about human rights, civil rights, in the immediate aftermath of the 9/11 attacks.
That's right. I mean, if you can imagine back to September 12th of 2001, the mindset, and you think about things that came out in Congress after that, you had, you know, the Patriot Act that was pushed through and then many people objected to later on. If you looked at public opinion, you know, we think of public opinion and approval of Congress as historically being, you know, in the low teens or maybe 20%. After 9/11, it spiked up to 60-70%, but then 6 months later, approval of Congress was back down to kind of where it has been since, or at least a little bit higher, but then continuing on that decline. So, public opinion changes very rapidly, and voters tend to have a short memory, so that, you know, things shift very quickly over time. We thankfully have not had an attack in, you know, 13-plus years since, but if something else would happen, then I think you would see a dramatic shift in public opinion on this issue.
Brenda, if I can jump in here and have you get in here, Dennis, after I mentioned what Brenda in an email writes. Interesting to hear some of the same people complain about the CIA program now, writes Brenda. Many of them supported it after 9/11. Hindsight, it always 20/20, but at the same time, it was supported by the majority of politicians in Washington. As far as what was gained, it depends on who you listen to. Try to present both sides. Protecting this country takes priority over feeling good about ourselves. And she cites Hiroshima as an example of what she calls a necessary evil. Dennis.
Well, that's, again, that dilemma I said has been around for hundreds and hundreds of years in Western culture about necessity versus morality. But I want to go back to what the caller said about his being against releasing the report now, and that connects to the very important point that Chris said at the outset. My understanding, of course, is that it was released now because once the Republicans take control of the Senate in January and a Republican chairs that committee, that report would not come out, period. Not just later, but would not come out, period. So the concern was the view was the need to get this out now or never. And that links to Chris's important point at the outset that aside from that broader ethical or moral dilemma about security versus morality, the problem is that you can't have, certainly in a democracy, you can't have a rogue agency running out on its own, even if the people who are accountable have some plausible deniability. You can't allow for an agency to be a freelancer out there on its own doing whatever it wants, independent of any kind of accountability on their part. That's a tremendous danger.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, not only if you're talking about the CIA as a rogue agency here, the CIA in this report, it's revealed, outsourced this to private contractors.
Yeah, I mean, you end up with Mo, Larry, and Curley running these things. And there, I saw one reference to one prisoner being threatened with a power drill and a handgun, aside from the waterboarding and things like that. Again, are these effective techniques? They're certainly not professional techniques. And supposedly, some of the people doing this kind of investigation had histories of anger management problems and sexual assault and things like that. So, again, when you outsource all these sorts of things, you have people doing things in the name of the American people who aren't even politically accountable.
Let's take one more call and wrap up this part of our Politics Day conversation. Bob in Bettendorf, hello. Welcome to our program. What's
hello.
On your mind?
Now, I have a question about did what happened by the CIA, does that violate international standards? And what are the prospects of American officials, say if they're traveling in Europe, being snatched up by some European country and held for prosecution on war crimes?
Okay. Dennis, can you help us out at all with that?
Well, there is that law. Chris, I can't remember where that comes from. Is it UN or EU or something that, when you have people in Spain supposedly indicting someone for crimes committed in completely in a different country?
Mm-hmm.
Pinochet, it might have been in Chile, something like that. Yeah, I guess there is a kind of possibility in that regard, but that's part of the difficulties of our international system, how that works precisely. But, in this particular case, advance warning was given to embassies all over the world that this is going to come out. And, you know, this administration in particular does not want another instance of what we had in Benghazi in Libya, because that's still festering a problem in Washington. So, yeah, they're just complications all over the map. But I think the committee's view, at least the majority, the Democrats' view in the broad context, was that all things being equal, this is necessary to do, however difficult the circumstances.
So does this fade off, or what do we see going forward into 2015 with the new Congress? Chris, thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's going to continue to be debated, but I think, you know, right now the focus is certainly on the report released by the majority, by the Democrats. I think you'll see more and more talking about the Republican dissent. You know, they had questions about the methodology. They questioned that there were a number of individuals working for the CIA who were not personally interviewed, that there were a number of statements that were simply not used. So I think the debate is going to continue, but I think you're going to see, as Dennis mentioned, with Republicans in control of the United States Senate and the U.S. House, trying to sort of suppress that conversation or steer that conversation in a positive way. But right now, it's certainly going to have a lot of attention, and the fact that it was released before Republicans took over, I think you're going to continue to see this to be a hot issue for some time.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News Politics Wednesday with Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa and Dennis Goldford of Drake University. I'm going to move on to, of course, plenty of other politics happening this week. The report released yesterday from the Senate Intelligence Committee, overshadowing much of the politics. But let's get to this other major part. Jonathan Gruber, he served as a consultant for the Affordable Care Act. Now he has told an academic healthcare conference last year, words that are haunting him, haunting Democrats who support Obamacare. It was only able to pass, he said, because supporters of the law concealed what was in it. Here's what he said to say at last year's conference.
Lack of transparency is a huge political advantage. And basically, you know, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever. But basically, that was really, really critical to getting the thing to pass.
Now, that tape from that conference, other quotes from Jonathan Gruber making their ways over the internet and onto the media, leading Gruber to have to testify before the House Oversight Committee yesterday morning. This is where he apologized for his comments.
In some cases, I made uninformed and glib comments about the political process behind health care reform. I'm not an expert on politics, and my tone implied I was, which is wrong. In other cases, I simply made mean and insulting comments which are uncalled for in any context. I sincerely apologize for conjecturing with the tone of expertise and for doing so in such a disparaging fashion.
Okay, Chris Larimer, how much damage has been done from these Jonathan Gruber comments and the apology we heard?
Well, I don't know if there's been a lot of political damage done. I think what it has done is kept healthcare on the issue and the critics. It gives them another, something to talk about in terms of why healthcare was according to them, such a bad policy. But there was an extraordinarily complex piece of legislation. I mean, the Affordable Care Act was enormously long. You know, very few people read through it detail to detail. So, you know, I think given how much healthcare was a part of the November elections and then how much Republicans used it as a way to criticize President Obama, I think this is just something to keep that in the news and to keep that criticism moving forward as Republicans look to take over the United States Senate and then try to push legislation through again to try to repeal certain aspects of it.
Mm-hmm. Certain aspects in reading, according to Politico, the Republicans eager to use a special procedure that might let them kill part of a piece of the law, potentially the Medicaid expansion part, subsidies for purchasing health insurance. It's a process known as reconciliation. Dennis, can you tell us what you think the Republicans, at least some of them, the leadership under Mitch McConnell may have in mind?
Well, you know, you start from the premise that from the fact that Republicans generally tend to think the Affordable Care Act was spawned by Satan in the pits of hell. So this is something they, at least in principle, rally their troops with, mobilize their base with, want to eliminate or sworn to eliminate at some level. Now, there are various ways you can go about attacking it. One, of course, is this issue about whether the language of the act allows for the federal government to substitute for state subsidies. That's going to go before the Supreme Court. That's a real threat because that could unravel the finances of the whole thing. The Republicans, of course, know that as long as the president is the president, they're not going to be able to repeal anything just on a straight vote. They might want to tie aspects of it to funding measures, dare him to veto veto it. There's supposedly some agreement on the tax on medical equipment. But the law is so complicated, there are all sorts of avenues Republicans want to use to try to attack it. The problem for Republicans is, number one, explaining to 8 million, maybe as many as 20 million people in a couple of years that their health insurance is going to be taken away, and what they would propose to replace it. We don't have anything that they've agreed upon to replace that. So it's in flux, and we're just going to see the Republicans, because that's how, as Chris said, they campaigned on this. That's what justifies their existence to their base. They've got to show something to their base that they've worked to try to chip away at this, even if they can't do it in one fell swoop.
Chris Larimer.
Yeah, and I think the difficulty with the reconciliation process is that it first requires a budget resolution, which the United States Senate Democrats and Republicans have not agreed to in about five or six years. And so, you know, if they can get to that point, then that becomes a potential reality. But until they do that, which they haven't done for several years, you know, that's going to be pretty difficult to do.
We have just over a minute left here. Congressional leaders unveiling just over $1 trillion in spending on a bill yesterday night, keeping most of the federal government funded through September. Comment here about why just through September, Chris Larimer?
Well, that's, you know, through the end of the federal government fiscal year, and this continues a pattern of just continuing resolutions or passing short-term resolutions to deal with the budget. They have not dealt with the budget in a long-term way for, you know, 12, 13 plus years. This is unfortunately how the budget process seems to work at the federal level.
We heard in the news some contentious issues inserted into this bill because it's, what, Dennis, a must-pass bill, right? So you can put in a lot of things in there that perhaps are not politically acceptable otherwise.
That's right. That's right. I dare you to veto or not vote for this bill because it contains these necessary things. So will you swallow something you don't like in order to accommodate necessary things? And opposition researchers looking at the next election coming up will take very good account of this and sort of hang those things on the opposing candidates.
Mm-hmm. Where does this leave the shut down the government unless I get what I want faction of Congress, Chris?
Well, I think in this case, they're probably out of luck. I mean, the government is scheduled to shut down tomorrow, December 11th, if they do not get this through. It looks like they're going to pass a short-term measure to at least extend that for a few days so that the Senate, if the House gets it through, which it sounds like they will, then the Senate will also. And so, you know, it's going to be a continuing resolution that funds 11 of the 12 or puts through 11 of the 12 appropriation bills through the end of the fiscal year. And then Department of Homeland Security is the one that's a shorter term through the end of February.
Mm-hmm. Finally, I want to mention that this week, the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement at Drake University named you, Dennis Goldford, the Institute's first Flansburg Fellow. Congratulations to you.
Thank you. Given the giant that Jim Flansburg was in understanding Iowa politics and caucuses and things like that, I am no false modesty here. I am extremely humbled by that.
Mm-hmm. And quickly, before we have to go, your goals as a Flansburg Fellow?
Basically, it gives me a platform to do what we do on Politics Wednesday, is to help people understand the political process, what's going on, and informed citizenry is absolutely necessary for democracy, and you can't do that without information.
Okay, thank you very much, Dennis Goldford of Drake University, Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa. Thank you for coming into our studios.
Thank you, and congratulations, Dennis.
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Help from Phil Moss and Tony Daner. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.